Hey there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today, Vermont Edition is on the road again. We've set up at the VPR booth on Media Row at the Champlain Valley Expo in Essex Junction for the annual Vermont Farm Show. This three-day affair invites farmers, maple sugarers, beekeepers, loggers, and anyone else working in agriculture or land management or adjacent to those industries to get together and shoot the breeze, but also to get the latest news and technological updates, state regulations, land use practices, etc. We've been here the last several years trying to do the same, and this year we're here on day one, and this place is buzzing. If you've never been here, it's a big exposition space. So picture really, really high ceilings, big, empty, you know, big, empty room, concrete floors. You could make a really great hockey rink or maybe like six or seven soccer fields here if it was all empty. But instead, you've got all these tractors, honey samples, sheep, informational booths. They're all lined up in rows, and we are here having a great time. This morning, producers Rick Sangari and Matthew Smith were running around talking to all kinds of people and really trying to twist arms to get them to come on the show and tell us what they're all about. I think Rick and Matt talked to about three times as many people as are actually willing to come on the show today, but we have a great show for you just the same. And we're going to start today by looking at what has been happening with the government shutdown when it comes to agriculture in Vermont. And to that end, we are joined here at our booth by Wendy Wilton, State Executive Director of the USDA. She's usually based in Colchester, and she's here at the Farm Show. It's nice to have you with us, Wendy.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here. Great to meet you in person.
Nice to meet you in person, too. So, were you furloughed or were you working without pay? I mean, does that affect your job with the government shutdown?
I was actually on accepted status, meaning I was on call. Not paid. And that, you know, was fine because none of my staff were paid either. You know, we were on furlough and accepted a little bit later on. We were out of business for about a month, but we're fully back as of yesterday, and the staff is getting paid this week for all the back pay, which is great. That makes everybody happy, and we are really excited to be back. I know I can speak for most of my staff I've spoken to, and they are really happy to be back at work, working with the producers that we do every day. Everybody was really, really delighted how the shutdown ended, and be back in our communities.
So what kinds of programs does the USDA administer in Vermont that were affected by the shutdown?
Well, specifically the agency that I work for is the Farm Service Agency. As you know, USDA has several agencies that work in Vermont, Rural Development, NRCS, FSA, and several others. Farm Service Agency, primarily we provide loans to farmers, both direct and guaranteed loans, and we provide programs with crop insurance or price support, disaster relief, that kind of thing.
And so were all of those sort of shut down during the shutdown? I mean, did anybody miss a payment? Did anybody have any trouble with some of those, like the margin protection program or anything like that?
No. And the reason was that we really anticipated both USDA, the secretary, and us in Vermont. We anticipated that the shutdown may be coming back in the end of November. And to that end, we worked very hard to clean up any outstanding loan requests that were on our desks at that point. We also, you know, so we had it done by Christmas time. We also made all of the MFP payments. There were two different steps to that. One in the fall, people started enrolling in September. Most people, and if you enrolled once, you got the first payment, but also the second payment that was announced by the secretary in early December. So all of those went out for the people who had enrolled by the middle of December. That deadline for enrollment, by the way, if anybody's listening that hasn't enrolled, please come and enroll. That deadline has been extended to February 14th for the Market Facilitation Program. MPP payments were all made in December for all of the time that we had a margin calculated at that point. And there isn't one for December, so really, in reality, we made it all by Christmas, too. So if the shutdown had to happen at any point, this actually was not the worst time at all because so many of those payments had been made. We'd come to the end of the cycle with many of them, and it really isn't a heavy loan request period of time. Mm-hmm. Now that we're back, here we're at the end of January, starting in February, people start doing their tax returns. Producers start thinking about, geez, do I need an operating loan for spring? That's when they're going to start coming in. So we're coming back at a really good time. However, during the shutdown, we were partially operational for loans starting week before last, January 17th, 18th, and the 21st. Our loan staff was back to do the 1099 reporting. And then right after that, starting Wednesday on the 22nd, the secretary had worked with OMB and some other areas of government to allow us to work on certain programs.
But are you worried then that in 3 weeks we might have another government shutdown or less than
well,
3 weeks now?
It's certainly possible. But we will work very hard over this next 3 weeks to make sure that we catch up on everything that we need to do for both our agency and our sister agency. And we will work as hard as we can and hope that it doesn't happen. How's that?
Wendy, can we talk a little bit about the farm bill and what farmers should know about? I mean, that has been a long and involved process. So just figuring out, you know, what's been going on with the farm bill.
Actually, you know, really, the 18 farm bill, I was worried that we may not see a farm bill till this spring. So I'm really, really happy that it was approved in December. That gives us a window on what we've got for workload for the next year in terms of what we can offer our producers. I think the big news there is going to be the improvements to what was MPP is now renamed to
MPP was the Margin Protection Program?
Yes, for dairy. And this is now called DMC. I know, who comes up with these acronyms? That one's pretty funny, right? But I think it's going to be improved. The margin is up to $9.50. The premiums are going to be a little bit lower. It has, it doesn't have just a one-year shelf life, and I think that's important for people to know. So I think, and I also think there's an opportunity that the milk price may come up slightly. That certainly seems to be the forecast, and I'm hoping that happens. But I think the combination of all those things will be very good for our dairy producers.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today and give us a little bit of an update here on what's been happening with the government shutdown and with the farm bill, which obviously affects dairy farmers and others here in Vermont. Wendy Wilton is State Executive Director for the USDA. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jane. And tell folks to come visit us in our county offices throughout the state. We're fully open, happy to be back.
Excellent. So come visit the USDA offices throughout the state, but also come to the Farm Show. We're here today. We're talking with many people. It's a three-day affair. I've been wandering around this morning. I checked out the Healthy Farms booth earlier, and this is a place where people can get free chair massages. There's a raffle. They ask you questions about skin cancer to try to get people informed and educated about, you know, some of the things that happen if you work outside you might need to know about. And they also do health screenings, one of the ways that they're trying to make sure that farmers and others who are working in these industries are making sure to take care of their health and take care of their mental health as well, because that's certainly been an issue for farmers in Vermont and elsewhere. So let's turn now to Eric Severy. He's the store lead for Harvest Equipment in Swanton, Vermont. And Eric, it's nice to have you on the show today.
Well, thanks for having us.
You asked me to promise you that I wouldn't ask you any really tough questions, so I won't. But you're the one who knows all of the answers here, not me. And the first thing that I want you to do is put me, in theory, in the cab of the biggest tractor you have here today. What are we in, and what am I looking at?
So we have a 6155R. Is the
6155R.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. All right, we don't even need you anymore.
Right. It's a very capable tractor, and it's the higher end option for that horsepower range. And they have a 6155M as well.
That's my favorite.
A little lower spec,
yep.
Right? A little less dollars. But a lot. You know, with that said, though, there's a lot less capabilities as well. So
when you're talking about capabilities, what are the capabilities? Because, you know, this is not your grandfather's tractor. I mean, we have computer equipment. We have tractors that, you know, are communicating with the cloud. I mean, there is a lot of technology in tractors these days.
Yeah, this would be the grandchild's tractor, right? So the M would be a little closer fitted for the grandfather, but there is a lot of capabilities, and, you know, as low milk prices, challenging environment, weather, and so forth, there's a need for increased capacity, so, and productivity, and obviously to reduce cost, the better the farmer can put quality forages away, will help reduce the cost to make a good quality product for them.
But so what does a tractor give me today that's connected to all of this computer system that I can't get just by, you know, figuring it out using mathematics on my own on paper? I mean, why does it? Because some of the things, when I was up in Franklin County a year and a half ago, I mean, they're like, the tractor knows how far apart your rows are planted.
Yep.
It knows how close to the ditch it is. It knows when to turn. I mean, these are high tech.
Yeah, so they're high tech and, you know, auto steer, auto guidance is very much a place today, you know, and it's come to Vermont now, but 10 or 15 years ago, it was, you know, I don't really need that. And then after you maybe transition a customer into using that technology, if you take that away from them today, they're lost because there's so many things that are going on with the implement, you know, recording, whether it be a feed value or seed population. And it allows them to document and record so much more information that they just would not have time to do if they were pushing the pencil and writing things down as they went. You know, nutrient management, water quality is also a hot button here in Vermont. So there's sensors that can measure the value of the manure that's being applied and recording the acres that it's being applied on. So, you know, if it can do that while it's being done, and then it can generate a map so they can, you know, they'll know the values of the manure and or chemical fertilizer that's spread. And then they can take the yield data from the harvester and say, well, you know, with 30 ton of corn silage, it should have consumed X, Y, and Z of the nutrients out of the soil. So
it is
very high-end stuff. And it's coming, you know, it's coming this way for sure.
So you mentioned, I think it was this 6155R.
Mm-hmm.
That's your top end. How much does that run you?
I think that tractor is, you know, it's very well equipped, and I think it has a full list, suggested list retail price of around $200,000.
So are you anticipating selling one of those, or do you have a different motivation for being here at the farm show?
No, that chassis, that horsepower level, has slowly become our big mover. You know, 10 or 15 years ago, it might have been a 100 horsepower tractor. So as productivity and larger implements have come upon us, we need to have a bigger tractor as well.
But, I mean, nobody's driving that out the gate here today, right?
You're
here, are you here making contacts and hoping that somebody will come find you in a couple of weeks?
We still got 2.5 days.
So you really are hoping.
Yeah. It gives a chance for farmers and people of interest to come in and see it, talk about it inside in a warm environment versus what we might have tomorrow, you know.
Eric Severy is the store lead at Harvest Equipment, which is in Swanton, Vermont. Eric, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very
much. Yes, thanks for having us.
And I'll come by when I'm ready for the 6155R.
All right, thank you.
I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition. We're talking today to you live at the Vermont Farm Show. It's in the Champlain Valley Exposition in Essex Junction. We're here every year and excited always to be here to learn new things and to find out what's happening in the industry as people look at, you know, new technology like we're talking about with Eric or what the regulations are, what's happening with the Farm Bill. You can find it all here at the Farm Show every year, and we really appreciate being here as well. Joining us now is Judy Rosofsky, state entomologist. Judy, nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I wanted to ask you specifically, I mean, we've talked in the past about a lot of the forest pests that we find in Vermont, and I know you want to highlight the emerald ash borer, but, you know, we don't hear quite as much about some of the agricultural pests. So can you tick through some of the pests that farmers or those who are planting crops have to worry about in Vermont?
Sort of.
Oh, I didn't think that was going to be a tough one.
No, you know, we really do work mostly on invasives and prevention. So, and I've been so focused on the emerald ash borer, but you know, they're perennial favorites. The main thing to think about as a farmer in Vermont is to consider using integrated pest management techniques to try to reduce the amount of pesticides, because pesticide resistance is really one of the foremost problems, I think, facing agriculture these days. So just try to mix up your attacks. You know, you can try using some groovy natural product and then use a nasty organophosphate and then use, you know.
No judgment there on that.
No, none whatsoever. I just meant nasty in terms of the insect. They don't like them too much unless they're resistant. So, and then try, you know, crop rotation and different timing and planting different things and whatever is out there. Our extension people are fantastic, and we're also right next to Cornell, which has really great information in addition to our own excellent experts.
But that isn't something that you focus on. I mean, we know in some other states the invasive or non-invasive but native but really detrimental agricultural pests are a big focus of a lot of states, and that's not something that we face in quite the same way in Vermont, it sounds like.
Well, I think that it's more that the extension people in the different colleges have been able to sort of fill that gap, and so that leaves us free to focus on new and incoming agricultural pests.
All right, Judy, go ahead. What are you focusing on now? What are you worried about?
Well, the new ugly beastie coming up is the spotted lanternfly, which has been found in Pennsylvania and surrounding states. And it's very pretty.
You brought a handout.
I did, yes.
The upper wings are brown with black spots, and the lower are black and white and red. Really beautiful, you're right. And even the beetle is really beautiful.
That's right. So these are the larval form, actually. It's a hemipteran, which is it's kind of like a giant aphid. And so
yeah, I was expecting a caterpillar, but no.
Yeah, no. So we just thought we'd change things up. Instead
Great.
Of having a beetle or a moth or butterfly, we've got something that looks like a butterfly but isn't. So what they do is they excrete honeydew, which makes a sticky, gooey fluid all over everything, and then it turns into sooty mold. And then they also...
On what? What are they infecting mostly?
Lots of stuff. Unfortunately for Vermont, that would include grapevines, all the stone fruit trees like peaches, plums, apricots, apples. So really bad news if it comes up here. The good news, I like to have good news sometimes, is it? It requires a tree of heaven, ailanthus, which is also an invasive pest tree, to complete its life cycle. And we don't seem to have a lot of those trees in Vermont, so we are hoping that will keep this insect out of our state.
Boy, that's rare. I mean, usually when we're talking about invasive pests, it's not an if, it's a when. And this could actually be an if. You think that we could actually keep this at bay?
Crossing my fingers, but no, not really.
And what about the emerald ash borer? Anything we should know about that as we head into the spring?
Sure. So we are asking people to try to slow the spread of the emerald ash borer, and the best way you can do that is to not move wood that you think might be infested during the flight season, which goes loosely from May 1st to October 1st.
But wait, you said wood that you think might be infested. You know, does that mean really that we get a pass if I'm carrying my firewood in from another state? And I didn't think it was infested.
Well, that brings up another issue, which is we have a quarantine, so any firewood coming from out of state has to be heat-treated or otherwise treated to make sure we're not bringing in pests from our neighbors. So, great question.
It's almost like I served that one up for you.
I know, I'm telling you.
But so you should be careful about transporting timber around the state. And are you here talking to foresters about that? I presume that that's something that, you know, people who work in this industry are pretty well aware of.
Unfortunately, not so much, because we've had several people say, well, I thought the ban was lifted. And so we don't have a ban except for incoming firewood from out of state. We do have a set of recommendations, and we do have a general law that says you're not allowed to transport, sell, move, or do anything with wood products that have diseases or pests, or actually any plants that have pests or diseases. So, you know, you can go ahead and move whatever you want, but if we catch you, then you are busted.
Yeah, don't do that. And if you have other questions, come to the farm show. You can talk to Judy. You can talk to others who are working on these things. Judy Rusofsky is the state entomologist for Vermont. Thank you very much for talking with us again.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. And if it sounds a little different, we don't actually have a crowd wandering through our studios here at VPR. We have gone to the crowd. We're at the Vermont Farm Show at the Champlain Valley Exposition in Essex Junction. We're learning a lot of things today here at the start of this three-day agricultural event, a great way for people who work in all kinds of industries to get together to learn new things themselves and to just, you know, shoot the breeze, find out what's been going on with people they haven't seen in a while. We have never met Ken Hicks, who's with us now. He's the owner of Hicks Sales in East Corinth, Vermont, but I'm pleased to be able to shoot the breeze with you, Ken.
Yeah, nice to be here.
So what do you do? What are you mainly in the business of? I hear it's cow comfort.
We do everything inside a barn except for the milking stuff, all the ventilation, all the cleaning, all the feeding. take care of that from start to finish.
I saw some ventilation systems on display that were enormous. I mean, they are just like 20 or 30 feet high, a big fan inside. How important is ventilation inside a barn?
Ventilation is critical. Cows have to have fresh air. It has to be maintained at proper temperatures, no different than a human environment, but everything's got to be clean and fresh.
What's the optimal temperature for cows? What do they like to be at?
It varies a little bit, but somewhere between 40 and 50 degrees.
And in a barn, can you use the heat of the herd to actually keep the temperature that way, or do you need to be heating your barn all winter and cooling it in the summer?
No, you use the heat of the herd, but body heat is moist heat, and so we have to maintain the moisture levels and the temperature levels. So we have sensors throughout most of the modern barns that help us do that.
And then dehumidifiers are you using?
No, just ventilation, moving of air.
So one of the things that I always love to come see are the cow water beds that are on display here.
Yep.
What's the value of these? This nice bedding for cattle?
It's soft. It never changes. The biggest thing is it's consistent, and we want a cow to be comfortable. So no matter how she lays on it, she's comfortable. So.
And the cows that are comfortable, do they actually produce better?
Yes. It's no different than a human. If you're comfortable in your environment and you got plenty of feed, everything's clean and fresh air, you do well. And making milk is work for the cows, so we want them to make milk, so we want to keep them comfortable.
How'd you get into this business?
I grew up on a dairy farm. My brother still has one. Just kind of a natural fit. So.
Did you not want to keep dairying? Were you interested in doing the sales, or did it just sort of happen that way?
Yeah, we did. We were all set. We farmed ourselves for 6 years on a rent situation, but it was back in the 80s when interest rates were high. It wasn't a good time to buy a farm, so we elected to start doing other things and looking other places. So.
Is it a good time to be in the dairy equipment business? I mean, dairying is hard, and in the state of Vermont, you know, you hear a lot about farm consolidation and not necessarily a reduction in the number of cows, you know, maybe an increase, in fact, in herd sizes on some farms. But what about the equipment side of things?
The equipment side is just as bad. Farmers don't have money. They can't spend it. It's that simple. But on the other hand, they still need parts and pieces. They still need to fix what they have. We've been fortunate. We're a small company, and we've kept busy. So.
You have kept busy.
Yeah.
And you come to actual farms, so if somebody has a need for equipment, will you go in and say, look, here's how I think you should reevaluate things, and here's what you might need, and if you've got the money, I'd do this, and we can help you get it set up?
Yeah, we'll go in, we'll talk to them about all kinds of different scenarios, whatever their problem is, and try to help them solve it, and try to do it in the most economical way that's going to last. And, do the best we can.
So here at the farm show, are you hoping to make sales? I mean, we were talking earlier about tractor equipment and maybe somebody driving out a $200,000 tractor. Are you really, really working on sales, or are you working on contacts and getting people to think of you when they need that equipment?
Well, that's first and foremost. The sales usually come later. Once in a while, you'll make a sale here, but it's mainly making contacts. Most of the stuff we do, we have to go physically see the place and measure it and talk to them. Everything is custom that we do.
And did you bring any samples? I mean, you're going to compete here with the booths that have temporary tattoos and cheese and maple syrup. You're in trouble again.
I'm sorry. We got a few pictures and a few videos playing, but...
Ken Hicks is the owner of Hicks Sales in East Corinth, Vermont. If you need farm equipment inside the barn, Ken is your man. Ken, thanks very much for talking with us. Appreciate your time today.
Yep, thank you for having me.
We are talking today from the farm show at the Champlain Valley Expo. From where I sit, I can see some of the other media organizations, but I can also see these buckets of hay, some of them award-winning, and it's a really tantalizing thing to see here in the dead of winter. We're talking to many different people who do lots of different things here at the farm show and around Vermont and are here trying to educate people or sell people equipment. Our next guest is not trying to sell anything, but she's trying to keep people educated here and in line, perhaps. Stephanie Smith is the Chief Policy Enforcement Officer, and she works on hemp with the Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Marketing. Stephanie, it's nice to have you with us
today. Thanks for having me.
So hemp has been a big issue in the news, and certainly a lot of questions around hemp and hemp growing and what's allowed under federal policy and what's allowed under state policy, and how can you be somebody who grows hemp in the state of Vermont. So give us this sort of quick and dirty update here, because we've been seeing an increase in hemp farming.
Yes, there's a tremendous increase in hemp farming, even from 2017 to 2018 in the state of Vermont. In 2017, we had approximately 89 growers registered with the agency, and then with 580 acres under registration. And then in 2018, we had 461 registered growers and over 3,000 acres registered for growing.
What happened in that interim time that caused that jump? Was it changes in regulations or just changes in interest?
I don't know for certain, but I think that the prospects of the 2018 Farm Bill potentially created a drive for folks to begin registering and cultivating hemp. In 2018, under the Farm Bill, industrial hemp was delisted from the controlled substance list, and so it's a legal agricultural commodity in the state of Vermont and nationally.
Yeah, when you talk about a legal agricultural commodity, it wasn't that nobody was growing it before, though, so they did have to register, right? You had to have, I think it was like educational plots. I mean, you had to sort of register. Was it through UVM Extension that you had to be registered?
You could have registered. UVM Extension was the first institution in the state of Vermont that established a hemp program, research program. The agency since then, in 2018, we passed the Act 143, which also created a program with the Agency of Agriculture, and I think that was also potentially a drive for individuals to register.
And so you still have to register. I mean, you're registering people if they grow hemp. If I'm growing corn, I don't have to register that with the state, right? So if it's delisted, why do I still have to register?
Because the federal government says you have to. Yes, you have to be registered as a part of a program. Currently, we're still operating under the pilot program, which was enabled in 2014 under the Farm Bill. But with the passage of the 2018 Farm Bill, states are going to be able to submit state plans, which will control the growing of hemp in the state, or at the federal level, the USDA will adopt a national plan that will apply and allow for individuals to grow nationally.
One of the things we'd heard about in a previous hemp show was the possibility for cross-contamination with people who are growing marijuana. And, you know, that only happens if your marijuana plot is outside and the hemp is outside. But is that something that you're concerned about with the legalization of recreational marijuana, that people can grow themselves?
I think there is potentially a concern, but most people who are growing for marijuana, and as well if you're growing for CBD, which is the primary crop that the state of Vermont is seeing right now, you're only going to go for floral material for the most part, so there isn't pollen being released into the air. And then those that do grow for seed, so we do have an active seed market as well in the state of Vermont. There's a company that presses for food-grade oil, and they press from the seed. But I don't think it's that major. We have topography.
Yes, we do.
So it's a little less of a risk.
Okay, so you're not too worried about the cross-contamination. I understand that there's actually a hemp growers conference in February coming right up, and it sold out, you know, like really quickly. And this is not just for Vermont hemp growers, but for people who are interested in the Vermont brand and hemp in Vermont?
Well, I think we have a national interest in this conference. This conference is being co-hosted by the UVM Extension at the Northwest Crops and Soils Program, as well as the Agency of Agriculture, Food and Markets in Vermont. And it has a national draw because I think there's an interest in individuals learning about how to cultivate hemp, how to, you know, what the agronomic research, what's happening in Vermont. And I think the Vermont brand comes in because Vermont has a strong brand, and people they want to learn.
A strong brand in general, but also a strong brand when it comes to hemp and
yes.
marijuana. Yes. Stephanie Smith is Chief Policy Enforcement Officer, works on hemp at the Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. Stephanie, thank you very much for talking with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is the Farm Show version of Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and we're broadcasting live here on the first day of the Farm Show, talking with a lot of different kinds of people, trying to keep this show interesting and moving, interested in what you are thinking and seeing and wondering about in Vermont agriculture. You can post a note on the show page at vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition to let us know what you're interested in, what you're seeing, and maybe you're here at the Farm Show. We'd love for you to say hi. VPR will be here actually all 3 days, so stop by our booth if you're going to come by. It's in Essex Junction at the Champlain Valley Expo. And joining us now is David Butler, a sales representative with the Leader Evaporator Company in Swanton. We're really hitting Swanton hard today. David, it's a nice pleasure to have you with us here on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So what do you do, Evaporator Company? You know, I'm thinking maple sugaring.
Maple syrup, value-added product, anything to do with maple.
Anything to do with maple. You're in it.
We're in it.
So is now a good time to be hitting people up? I mean, I've seen some of the lines going in and some of the hillsides around where I hike and walk, but not quite at sugaring season yet for most people, right?
We're not quite. I mean, some of the really big producers are starting to tap now. They have to. That's just a fact of life. If you've got 100,000 taps, you've got to start drilling holes early. In northern Vermont, we're still looking at end of February, early March, with this season extending into April. So we're not quite there yet.
So what are you talking to people about here at the farm show?
Anything they want to talk about. I mean, I do a lot of education here at the farm show, talking about reverse osmosis and different evaporation techniques, tubing techniques. Basically answer their questions if I can.
If I have, you know, if I'm ready just to get started, I've got my grove of sugar maples, I'm about to get started tapping. I got, you know, 60 trees, and I come to you and say, I don't know what I'm doing. What would you do for me?
First thing I would do is say, where are you? And I'll come try and find you and visit you. Any one of us sales representatives will. And look at your setup, look at your trees, and make some sort of recommendations as to what equipment you should use. We can price that equipment for you. We, Leader Evaporator, is unique in the industry in that we do primary, all our sales go through a dealer network around the whole maple area. So you don't necessarily buy directly from me, but I can recommend a dealer for you to work with that's local.
I understand your company's actually been around since 1888.
That is
some longevity.
Yep.
That's pretty great.
Yep. We've bought two or three different other companies as we grew. But since 1888.
Are you worried about being around in 2188? I mean, we're hearing a lot of different things about the potential for climate change to really kind of change the landscape of Vermont, including where the southernmost range for sugar maples are.
We don't spend a whole lot of time worried about that. I mean, let's hope it doesn't happen. That's about all I can say.
So here at the farm show, what else do you do when you're walking around? I mean, you've got what you're here for. You know you're trying to talk to people about their equipment, about sugaring, about what's coming up this season. Well, what are you interested in seeing when you walk around that may be way outside what you do on a daily basis? Or do you even have time for that?
Oh, good question. I've come to the farm show now quite a few years. I like seeing some of the growth, some of the different things, some of the changes, like how people change their booths. They may come year after year after year, but the products they're selling are different. I like seeing the young kids being involved here. I think that's important to get the future involved in agriculture and keep them there.
And there are a lot of young kids here.
There are.
You see a lot of people who look like they're, you know, pretty eyeing equipment, but then a lot of kids walk around getting a sample of cheese and learning something about farming.
Yep.
Well, David Butler is a sales representative for the Leader Evaporator Company in Swanton, Vermont. David, thank you so much for talking with us. Appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and we're broadcasting live from the Vermont Farm Show at the Champlain Valley Expo in Essex Junction today. We've been here the last few years, and we love to be here. We love to see what's going on with the agricultural community in Vermont and try to tap into some of the expertise that's here all gathered in one place for a couple days. It's a remarkable group of people. And sitting down across the booth from me now is Steve Nermy, the sales manager with RMI, which is a waste recycling reuse company that covers Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Maine, Eastern New York. Steve, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
So I'm going to give listeners a little bit of insight to how this works. We run around all morning trying to find people and say, can you come and talk to us? And then I sit down and I got to talk to you, but I don't even really know what you do because, you know, this is not a show where we have heavily researched, and I am steeped in the knowledge of your industry. So the first thing that I've been told is you work on a beneficial reuse, you know, reuse of waste that comes from a farm to try to basically enhance the soil. Sounds like composting, but it's not. Why not?
Yes, it doesn't come from the farm. Resource management, we've been around for 25 years. We recycle organic residuals for beneficial reuse, much of that being agricultural applications that are
organic residuals. Sounds like maybe it's a euphemism.
Yes, there are really three types of generators that we contract with. Biomass plants that produce wood ash, which is high in lime and potassium, and an excellent product. It's certified for organic use, OMRI listed. So a great fertilizer for the organic market that's out there. We also deal with biosolids, which come from wastewater facilities, municipalities. And that product is, there's both a Class B and then a Class A product. Class B requiring permitting. Class A is an alkaline process that achieves the pathogen level to about that of dirt, does not require any permitting. And that product is high in nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and lime. And then the third product that we deal with is short paper fiber out of paper mills. We deal with Soundview Holdings in Putney, Vermont. And we also deal with Cascade over in Mechanicsville, New York. So short paper fiber is high in lime and organic matter, and it works very well on cornland to incorporate into there. It gives it both the lime and the organic matter that's with it. And we also create an engineered topsoil with that where we can reclaim old gravel pits without taking any native loam or scarring another piece of land to reclaim one piece of land. So it's pretty neat. You take the mineral that's on site, you combine that with the paper fiber and put in about 20% of the biosolids that we just talked about, which is the nitrogen source, and you can have vegetative growth on large plots of land without defacing any other land to reclaim that spot.
Huh, that's neat. And how often are you doing that piece of the job, that piece of the work that you do?
All the time.
Really?
So all the generators that we contract with are producing around the clock year-round. So this business is unique in, you know, the spring and fall when the farms are looking for the material. We can't up production. It's kind of a fixed production, so we can't always take care of everybody.
And you can't store it? It's not something that can sort of wait until spring?
It can. We have some stockpiles, but we try to go direct to farm with everything. We don't landfill anything. This is what our company does, and we try to go direct to farm. So year-round, we're looking for these projects, and we actually have one right now that's taking the majority of the paper and mixing it throughout the winter, and that'll be ready to land apply come springtime.
Is this something that's pretty common practice, or are you here trying to educate people on, hey, here's a service that we provide that you might be interested in? I mean, is this something that everybody's doing?
No, there are very few people who do this. In the Northeast, there's really one other competitor that's out there. But it's our business, and again,
I mean, for farmers, are farmers like, yeah, do you contract with, you know, 75% of the farmers in Vermont, or are you trying to sell them on this idea that's unfamiliar?
The reclamation side of it, we're really trying to educate them on the alternative of an engineered topsoil. The other products, it's more letting them know that this is out there if they're not aware of the product. And the products perform very well. So it's unique in the sense that if we're trying to achieve a pH, say, on a farm's land, this will achieve that pH. So we go out there, we soil test for them. We map their farm so we know the acreage and what is being applied. We track every load that goes out there. But eventually we're going to achieve their goal. And we need to keep moving on to other farms because the product does work. And whether you're trying to get your potassium source or your nitrogen source or whatever it is. We're monitoring that all the time.
You know, it's interesting, Steve, because you've got this sort of nice closed loop here. You've got the source material that you get, and then you process it, and then you're putting it on the farms. But should people who are, you know, have nothing to do with agriculture, who have nothing to do with paper production, care what you're doing? Does this have some bigger impact on the Vermont landscape that we should be aware of?
It sure does. I mean, when the masses think of recycling, they picture their cans and bottles and newspapers and what we do on the weekends to the local recycling areas. But the millions of tons of residuals that are being produced globally need to be dealt with as well. And, landfill is an option, but it's not an option for us. So we take these products and we go out there, and we have a field of 6 people who are continuously out there selling and representing our products, and all we do is beneficial reuse and land apply these products. So our model is, yes, that's our recycling, but I do think it's being produced every day throughout the state of Vermont, and it's not, when you think of recycling, it's not necessarily one of those products that makes it, but when you look at the tonnage that is produced, beneficial reuse is the way to go.
That's Steve Nurmi, sales manager with RMI, and talking here about this beneficial reuse using these waste products like wood, ash, sludge, etc., and taking them from where they're being produced to use on farms to regenerate the soil. Thanks very much for talking with us today, Steve. Really
Thanks
interesting
very much,
to hear
Jay.
From
Appreciate
you.
It.
Again, we are broadcasting today from the Vermont Farm Show at the Champlain Valley Expo. We're here on day one. VPR is here all 3 days. If you're interested in finding out more, you can come and see our booth. You can come and join the fun here at the Vermont Farm Show. This is a farm show that is really geared towards the industry. So, you know, it is 3 days over the course of a work week in the middle of winter, perhaps at a time when people who work in farming have a little bit less to do and might be able to be here for 3 days. You know, it's not necessarily geared towards, in a regular Joe's and Jeff's who come to all of the farm and field days type shows that happen in the end of the summertime. It is more of an industry show, but there are certainly things and events for other people who want to get involved, like a consumer night. And here to tell us a little bit more about that and what people might find if they come to the Vermont Farm Show is Jackie Folsom, who's vice president of the Farm Show. Jackie, nice to talk with you again.
Thank you, Jane. We're so delighted that you're here.
Any snafus that you can tell us about that happened before the show started?
No, but we're not saying the S word for tomorrow.
Well, oh, snow. Good. I was like, I don't know if you should say the S word here either.
No, that's the bad one for shows like this. So we're hoping that everybody knows it's Vermont and everybody will show up.
All right, good. So, and why should people show up? As I said, I mean, this really is geared towards people who are working in the industry. So we've been talking to people who are working in equipment sales, who work in the sugaring industry. You know, there are samples here, but it's not the same as one of the agricultural fairs in August. So the value of the farm show here to people who work in these industries in logging and forestry and agriculture and sugaring?
You know, I think I would just say that it is important for everybody to come, whether you're in agriculture or forestry or not. Everybody eats. And this is a great showcase to really let people know who don't have anything to do with our industries how innovative we are and how much technology we use and how much we want to talk with them, just like the gentleman that was just here who was really talking about the wonderful job that farmers do as recyclers. And nobody ever thinks about those kind of things. So we really invite everybody to come. Of course, we are selling the big equipment.
It can be a little intimidating, though. You know, if you feel like you don't even know what to ask, it might be a little intimidating to come by.
That's true. And so, one of the things that we're doing to offset that is the passport program. Nice lead-in. And so, we've teamed with the Agency of Agriculture and the Farm to Plate program, and as well as the Farm Show. We are asking our guests to come in, and we've got a passport at the front desk in honor of Cabot Creamery's 100th birthday. And just for equal time, I do have to say St. Albans Co-op is also 100 years old this year. And so Cabot is helping us to spread people out into the two buildings. So we've chosen 9 vendors that we think have an opportunity to talk about why they're here to people that are not only farmers, but to regular folks who may want to learn more about what they're selling to us or what they're educating us about. So you complete your, you go to these 9 booths, you get your passport stamped, drop it off at the Farm to Plate booth, and on Thursday morning, we will have a live drawing on WDEV, and the prize is a year's worth of Cabot cheese. So who could not take that?
Jackie, one person's year's worth is another person's 3 months
well,
worth. How are you calculating that?
That is true. I you know, I can't win, so I don't know. But it will, you know, it's the best cheddar in the world, so hopefully somebody will win it and love it and share it. So, you know, that is one thing.
Can you tell us a little bit, too, about Consumer Night? Because this
sure.
is another big one that is popular with all kinds of people. And this is something that people can do even if they're working a 9-to-5 job and can't come here today.
Absolutely. And it's one of the reasons. Actually, we've been doing this Consumer Night for a long time, even before we moved up from Barrie. We used to do one. The Agency of Agriculture puts this on, and there's actually 2 components to it. There are about 50 vendors of various kinds that come in and promote their local products. You can sample them. You can buy them. They have all sorts of things in there. And while that's going on, we have the House Agency of Agriculture, the Senate Agency of Agriculture, and the Agency of Agriculture. And they are given a mystery protein. They don't unveil it till the folks walk up to the stage. And then they are given a bag of food, and they are given $50. And they're asked to go out and spend it within the farmer's market and make a meal, and it is judged. So they have a panel of judges, and they also have the audience can chime in and take samples. samples and then vote. And, you know, the Agency of Agriculture has won it the last 3 years.
I was going to say, they're kind of the ringers.
Yeah, the legislators aren't real happy about that. I mean, I work down at the State House on my other job, and all I'm hearing is, do you know what the protein is? How can we beat so-and-so?
What's your price, Jackie?
They haven't hit it yet. They haven't made that little, you know, right over the top ask on it. So we'll see what happens tomorrow night. But it is open. Of course, the show starts at 8:30 tomorrow. Consumer night begins at 4, and it goes until 7 o'clock. And our vendors are here until 7:30. So people can come in and wander through and visit, get your passport, fill it out, and then check out all the goodies that are available.
Jackie, I only left you about 15 seconds, but I mentioned that behind us there's all these buckets of hay, and I understand that's also one of your favorites.
Every time somebody asks me what's my favorite, you know, if you have ever stood in a hay field in July and smelled that wonderful smell, come on over to Media Row and turn right around and close your eyes, and it's summer in Vermont in January. So come on down and enjoy it. Free admission, free parking.
That's Jackie Folsom, Vice President of the Vermont Farm Show. Jackie, thanks, and thanks for your help getting us set up here.
Thanks, Jane. It's great to have you.